Srimad Bhagavatam, or the Bhagavat Purana, Canto 10, entitled the Samam Bonam, Chapter 8, Lord Krishna shows the universal form within his mouth. Today's verse number 44. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Sadyo Nashta Smritir Gopi Saropyaroham Atmajam Pravridha Sneha Kalila Hridayasid Yava Pura Sadyo Nashta Smritir Gopi Saropyaroham Atmajam Paravridha Sneha Kalila Hridayasid Yava Pura. Please chant. Ladies, anyone else? Sadya After all these philosophical speculations, Mother Yashoda fully surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Nashta Smriti, having gotten rid of the memory of seeing the universal form within Krishna's mouth, Gopi, Mother Yashoda, Sa, she, Aropya, seating, Aroham, on the lap, Atmajam, her son, Pravriddha, increased, Sneha, by affection, Kalila, affected, Hridaya, the core of her heart, Asit, became situated, Yathapura, as she was formerly. Please repeat. Immediately forgetting Yoga Maya's illusion that Krishna had shown the universal form within his mouth, Mother Yashoda took her son on her lap as before, feeling increased affection in her heart for her transcendental child. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Mother Yashoda regarded the vision of the universal form within Krishna's mouth as an arrangement of yoga maya, like a dream. As one forgets everything after a dream, Mother Yashoda immediately forgot the entire incident as her natural feeling of affection increased. She decided to herself, now let this incident be forgotten. I do not mind. Here is my son. Let me kiss him. So, I'd like to read this section that we just studied, this Krishna showing the universal form. And I'd like to read it to you as it appears in Prabhupada's Krishna book. So try to hear. It's not very long. Just try to hear nice. Another day, when Krishna and Balaram were playing with their friends, all the boys joined Balaram and told Mother Yashoda that Krishna had eaten clay. On hearing this, Mother Yashoda caught hold of Krishna's hand and said, my dear Krishna, why have you eaten earth in a solitary place? Just see, all your friends, including Balaram, are complaining about you. Being afraid of his mother, Krishna replied, my dear mother, all these boys, including my elder brother Balaram, are speaking lies against me. I have never eaten clay. My elder brother Balaram, while playing with me today, became angry, and therefore he has joined with the other boys to complain against me. They have all combined together to complain, so you will be angry and chastise me. If you think they are truthful, then you can look within my mouth to see whether I have taken clay or not. His mother replied, all right, if you have actually not taken any clay, then just open your mouth. I shall see. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, was so ordered by his mother, he immediately opened his mouth, just like an ordinary boy. Then Mother Yashoda saw within that mouth the complete opulence of creation. She saw the entire outer space in all directions. Mountains, islands, oceans, seas, planets, air, fire, moon, and stars. Along with the moon and the stars, she also saw the entire elements, water, sky, the extensive ethereal existence, along with the total ego and the products of the senses and the controller of the senses, all the demigods, the objects of the senses like sound, smell, etc., and the three qualities of material nature. She also could perceive that within his mouth were all living entities, eternal time, material nature, spiritual nature, activity, consciousness, and different forms of the whole creation. Yashoda could find within the mouth of her child everything necessary for cosmic manifestation. She also saw within his mouth herself taking Krishna on her lap and having Krishna sucking her breast. Upon seeing all this, Yashoda became struck with awe and began to wonder whether she was dreaming or actually seeing something extraordinary. Yashoda concluded that she was either dreaming or seeing the play of the illusory energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yashoda thought that she had become mad, mentally deranged, to see all these wonderful things. Then Yashoda thought, "It may be cosmic mystic power attained by my child, and therefore I am perplexed by such visions within his mouth. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, under whose energy bodily self and bodily possessions are conceived." Yashoda then said, "Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto him under whose illusory energy I am thinking that Nanda Maharaj is my husband and Krishna is my son, that all the properties of Nanda Maharaj belong to me, and that all the cowherder men and women are my subjects. All this misconception is due to the illusory energy of the Supreme Lord. So let me pray to him that he may protect me always." While Mother Yashoda was thinking in this high philosophical way, Lord Krishna again expanded his internal energy just to bewilder Yashoda with maternal affection. Immediately, Mother Yashoda forgot all philosophical speculation and accepted Krishna as her own child. Yashoda took Krishna on her lap and became overwhelmed with maternal affection. She thus began to think, "Krishna is not understandable to the masses through the gross process of knowledge, but Krishna can be received through the Upanishads and the Vedanta or mystic yoga system and Sankhya philosophy." Then Yashoda began to think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as her own begotten child. Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar, Sri Vasari Gaur Bhaktivrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Mahare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Trinadhyapi Sunichena Taroriva Sahishnuna, Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Sadahari. Hare Nama, Hare Nama Eva Kevalam. Kalo Nastyeva, Nastyeva, Nastyeva Gatiranyata. Thank you, New Dwarka Temple, allowing me this privilege of devotional service. Yashoda points out something concerning understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We learn from the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita, and it is mentioned at least three times in chapter 8, chapter 11, and chapter 18, that there is only one way to know, to see, to understand, and to return home, back to Godhead. And that is called bhakti, devotional service. And devotional service, in a very beginning understanding, is defined by Narada Muni, as we find Lord Chaitanya quoting, Sarva upadhi vinir muktam tat parat vena nirmalam. Rishikesha sevanam bhaktir uchyate. Bhaktir uchyate. What is called bhakti? First of all, sarva upadhi vinir muktam. First order of business, become free from all designations. And, curiously enough, how does Krishna begin Bhagavad Gita? You're not that designation. This is the beginning of transcendental knowledge. First, I have to understand what I am and what I am not. And I'm not any of these material, temporary designations. As Lord Chaitanya also mentioned to Rupa Goswami, Brahmanda Brahmate Kono Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade Vai Bhakti Lata Beej. Brahmanda Brahmate, the soul is like on a Ferris wheel, sometimes up, sometimes down. Sometimes life as a demigod enjoying topmost material sense gratification, and sometimes a worm in the stool. Nothing fixed. Sometimes up, sometimes down. Constantly rotating. Even within this lifetime, we all have experience. Sometimes life is good, and other times it sucks. It happens to everyone. You just have to get... Again, Krishna told this to Arjuna in chapter 2. Tamsta tikshasva. You have to tolerate this. The mistake of modern man... Yes, the mistake of man since time immemorial. Thinking that I will solve my problems by some material adjustment. But that is not the teachings of Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. And is certainly not the teachings of A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada either. The solution to all problems is to go back home, back to Godhead. After all, whether you're in the topmost planet or whether you're in the hellish planets, what does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? Dukhalayam ashasvatam. This whole material existence is a temporary place of suffering. Yes, even the demigods, they are not enjoying unadulterated happiness. They are also fearful. And we have already read in the 8th canto, one day, Indra wakes up and he sees his capital has been overtaken by Bali and the demons. And what does his guru tell him? Now's not the time. Don't fight. Retreat. This is not your day. So even I'm thinking, yeah, I don't like this California. Let me try for the heavenly planets. Well, you're not going to be happy because this is Kunta, not Vaikuntha. This whole material existence is designed by its creator to be a place of anxiety. Nobody is free from anxiety. Everybody has something pinching. Something. You may have lots of money. That's okay. There's going to be something pinching. After all, material existence means 1, 2, 3 miseries. Either you are going to suffer from outside existential forces, the devatas, or you're going to suffer from other living entities. Everybody has their enemies. Or you're going to suffer because of your own body and mind, because this is a material body and mind. And those of us who are getting up in age now, we look at you young punks and we go, oh my God, I also used to be able to jump and run, but now I get out of bed, I look in the mirror, God, what happened? You look at your partner and you look and you go, what happened? And she's looking at you too. What happened? That's why, what does Prabhupada teach? Make the best use of a bad bargain. Material existence is a bad bargain. Make the best use. It is astounding and amazing to me, because now I'm starting to realize just how much Prabhupada gave us and how he saved us. Some years ago, when I had to get a job in order to maintain my family, it was quite a rude awakening. I went to an agency to get some job, and they said, you know what? You're qualified to become a file clerk. It was like, what? Who do you think you're talking to, man? But it was quite shocking re-entering the material world. But as I tolerated, learned the ropes, moved up little by little by little, what dawned on me was Prabhupada had given me enough how to survive. Look at my wife. She joined the movement when she was like just becoming 17. She didn't even finish second year high school. But because of what she learned from Prabhupada, the movement and the devotees, she had that thing which many people don't have. And it's not so common. Common sense. And she just applied, and I also applied, what the temple had taught me, what ISKCON had taught me, and what Prabhupada had taught me. And that got me through that. That's why I don't regret. I dropped out of college way before I found the devotees. But I feel by reading Prabhupada's books, I have more than a PhD. It's been my personal experience. Prabhupada's books are so full of transcendental and practical knowledge. It's not just religious. Yes, they're spiritual, but it's very practical. Prabhupada, you are the greatest teacher there is. That's why those rare devotees who go out and distribute Prabhupada's books, they are worshipable demigods. Because they are giving the fallen conditioned souls this gem, jewel. Actually, these books that we are giving, they're priceless. There's some silly commercial they have. Priceless. No, it's not. Your credit card is not priceless. But Prabhupada's books, that's priceless. That I can testify. Sarvabhupati Vinir Muktam, become first of all free from all designations. Then, Sarvabhupati Vinir Muktam, Tat Padat Vena Nirmalam. Put yourself in a pure state of existence. That's why it is mandatory for regulative principles. No illicit sex. No intoxication. No meat eating. No gambling. By simply agreeing to these four principles, you are now pretty much living a pure existence. Now the next two lines. Rishikena. Rishika, your senses. And that ena ending is the instrumental case in Sanskrit. Instrumental case means with or by. So with your senses, Rishika Isha Sevanam. Serve the Isha, the controller of the Rishika. The controller of the senses, beautiful Lord Sri Krishna. It is also amazing and astounding coming and seeing the beautiful deities we have here in this great temple, New Dwarka. And the devotees who personally serve the deities and make this temple so beautiful. Because whether you know it or not, these deities are world famous. It shocked me. I think it was 1988. I went to Vrindavan. And when you go to Vrindavan, you gotta go to Loi Bazaar. So I was doing some shopping because if you go to Vrindavan, you don't just chant. You gotta do some shopping. And lo and behold, in this one shop, I see in the back a picture of Rukmini Dwarkadish. And that's when it dawned on me. Most famous, most beautiful. They're all over. They're all over the world. And many people have told me over the years, Indian people, I'll never forget, many years ago, one Sunday feast, one Indian lady came up to me, Prabhuji, I've been to so many temples in India, but when I come here, there's something special. This is unsolicited. She came up to me and told me, and I've heard this more than once in my travels. So, Why is that? Why is that? There are several reasons why. First of all, and Swabhas will agree, because Prabhupada was here in this temple and spent lots of time in this temple. And that's why the other day I was playing devil's advocate with Swabhas. So I was asking him, so Swabhas, if somebody offered you 60 million, would you move the temple? No. I said, Okay, 100 million. No. I said, why? He said, because Prabhupada's footprints are here. And then he told me something that I don't have. This is his realization. That when he goes traveling and he comes back to New Dwarka, he says he feels Prabhupada's presence. Am I correct? Is that what you said? You actually feel Prabhupada's presence here. So that's one reason why this temple is uniquely special. My vision is why people say that our deities are special is because of the love, devotion, service that all the pujari team, because it's not just one priest, it's a team, are sacrificing day in and day out to make these deities look so wonderful, so bright. This is what Prabhupada wanted. The whole scheme, why we dress the deities opulently, there's a science behind it. Because this material world is so contaminating, and Maya's glare is so strong, so powerful, Maya's glare. The conditioned souls are entrapped. They're caught up. Something has to unattract them. So that's why the deities must be dressed opulently to nullify that glare of Maya. And there's one place Prabhupada mentions that if you're not sufficiently purified, you cannot look at the deity for a long period of time. You get restless. You get distracted. So that's a good way to test yourself. How much can I spend looking without being diverted? So the bhakti process, Rishikena Rishikesa Sevanam, with your senses, serve the master of the senses. We have Ambarish Maharaj as a great example, how he utilized all his senses to serve Krishna. And in a practical way, because Prabhupada's books are not just, how should I say, it's not just information. There is practical application. So Prabhupada has given us this wonderful program, Mangalarti, Tulsi Puja, Japa, greeting of the deities, classes, and then practical manual labor to serve the Sankirtan movement. As I mentioned, I think in the last class, everything is centered around book distribution. Whether you're in the kitchen, pujari department, whatever you are, you're part of the Sankirtan army. The frontline soldiers, they are to be given all encouragement, all accolades, but the support staff, you are also glorious support staff. I was thinking today, during the kirtan, I gazed at Sura, and I was thinking, I want to tell everybody a little story about Sura. Back in 55th Street, Sura at that time had a younger body. And he was such a powerhouse of book distribution. He was such a ball of enthusiasm and confidence. And 55th Street Temple, we had Surah, Prabhosh. We had Kashi Ram, right? Nakatma was there. Was Vaish there for some time? Yeah. It was like the all-star of book distribution. You know, like they have in the sports, they have the all-star. They had, you know, your top-line preachers. They would go out every day to the airport. One of my services would sometimes bring prasadam to the airport book distributors. Or other things. I wish you could have seen Sura back then. He was like so powerful. So in this line, Rishi Kena Rishikesha Sevanam, Lord Chaitanya explains this further. Lord Chaitanya says, Atakshi Krishna Namadi Nabhaved Grayam Indriyai. Sevan Mukhe Hi Jivadau Svayam Eva Spurat Yida. This is also in the same understanding, same vein of how to see God. Lord Chaitanya says, Atakshi Krishna Namadi Nabhaved Grayam. Your blunt material senses will never be able to show you God. Impossible. That's not the process. Your blunt material senses. Sevan mukehi jiva dao. But if you begin devotional service, beginning with the tongue, svayam eva spurat, gradually Krishna reveals, which leads to the chapter Prayers by the Personified Vedas. The chapter opens up with the discussion, the absolute truth is avan manasa gochara, beyond the range of the senses. The absolute truth is adhoksaja, beyond the range of the senses. So Parikshit says, if that's the case, then why do anything? The absolute truth is beyond. Why bother? Shukadev says, no. The absolute truth is able to reveal himself if he so chooses. So Lord Chaitanya says, here's how the absolute truth will reveal himself. You use your tongue. You chant Hare Krishna. You talk about Krishna. You describe Krishna. You preach Krishna. Use the tongue for Krishna. Then, my favorite, take prasad. And that's how I'll end the class. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Any discussion? Yes, Bhrigupati.
Thank you. Nice class. Is it okay to make its material adjustments if it doesn't interfere with your service? That's 'cause
I love this question. This is a good question. I get this question a lot. So yes, even though I said what I said, still, every one of us is going to have to make some material adjustments. So, the criteria is as follows, because I'm asked this question constantly. When you make a quote-unquote material adjustment, actually it's not, because you're engaged in devotional service, so it's not a material adjustment. But for the sake of argument, you base your decisions on how is it going to affect my hearing and chanting. If you make a decision and you know I'm going to be doing less chanting, less devotional service, then you know it's the wrong move. But if the decision you're making means you're going to do more chanting, more preaching, more devotional service, that's good. Then that's why it's not a material adjustment. It's a spiritual adjustment. Spiritual adjustments, we're doing that all the time. That's what management has to do. Temple management has to make spiritual adjustments. Does that satisfy?
Yeah.
Good. Yes. I'm sorry. I'll get you next, Maharaj. Yes. Please forgive me.
So this is kind of similar to what Bhrigupati was asking, because I had the same thing in my mind. I'm actually thinking when I come to Mangal Artik, I can't hear myself sing because there's other parties who are singing very loud during the response, so loud that it becomes difficult to hear the rest of the devotees. I can only hear this one devotee. So I'm thinking, is this affecting my hearing and chanting in a way that I can't, you know, should I attend Mangal Artik? Because I want to hear, I want to concentrate, I want to meditate on the song to Srila Prabhupada, but I feel distracted. So should I be thinking in terms of adjusting my morning program? Or is it fair for someone in the morning program to sing louder than everyone else during the response?
Have you thought of this? Have you thought of this? Have you thought of humbly, gently saying to this devotee?
Yes, I've done that.
And it still doesn't work?
No, it doesn't. Does not work.
Ah, then we have a problem.
It's been requested by other people too.
Then take it to the boss.
I tried that.
And still no result.
I don't know. He might be just deliberating.
Okay.
Because it's not easy.
I cannot advise you. I cannot in good conscience advise you to stop coming to Mangal Artik. I would say, oh, there you go. I would say,
I'm telling you honestly, I've tried that.
Okay. All right. Well then, maybe you should ask a better...
I'm not going to give up.
Okay.
But sometimes it gets like that.
Okay. Well, it's part of the toleration of being on the ISKCON boat. So when you're on a boat, it's rocking and rolling. So it's part of the toleration. Make sure you don't get thrown off the boat.
Thank you.
Amala Bhakti Maharaj has been waiting. I'm sorry.
Thank you for a wonderful class, Narantra Prabhu, as usual. The question I have, I'll ask in a few moments, but I just wanted to add something to what you had answered in terms of answering Bhrigupati Prabhu, making adjustments, and you had mentioned that as long as the adjustment helps us to hear better, to chant better, to become more absorbed in Krishna consciousness more, then that is the yardstick or the way we would measure or consider whether the adjustment is useful or not useful. And I would just add one point to that, is that not only are we making advancement, or not only is it helping my chanting, but also the adjustments are sometimes made for the the benefits of the people whom we are trying to, for example, influence, perhaps to take a book. A devotee may feel uncomfortable wearing devotee clothes and may feel more comfortable in dealing, at least to develop some rapport with the what you call the person on the street, the person he's dealing with. And he may make the adjustment in wearing what we call karmi clothes or non-devotee clothes. So it's not only for our benefit, but it's for someone else. It's for the other person's benefit as well, so that they will hopefully take the book, or they will feel some more rapport quickly. Because I see many of the devotees, they just wear regular clothes, and people immediately groove with them quickly, and the devotees also speak in a manner which is very familiar and very identifiable, like, you know, hey, that's cool, man, and all this kind of thing. So these are the little things you put on in order to create a sense of harmony, a sense of familiarity, which then further induces them to want to hear more about what you have to say. They are external, true, and they're not the main point, but they're just what you call a little icing on the cake, so you can actually get them to eat the cake. I just wanted to add that.
Okay.
If you want to make any comment
on
that.
No, I accept, and Prabhupada supports it. It's right there in Chaitanya Charitamrita, what you just said.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Now you wanted
to... Now the question that I had is this, and I get this question quite often, and quite frankly, I cannot answer it with any degree of truthfulness, and hopefully you can help me to do that. The question I often get, because you are making a very, very wonderful glorification of our deities, and I couldn't agree with you, and I think no one here could not agree with you more, and they are so beautiful and so compelling and so desirable to look at, and they do give some blissfulness. But the question that I get is, in our scriptures, and I don't mean one of the scriptures, I mean all of the scriptures, Krishna is described as being bluish, blackish, or blackish, bluish. That is his color. That is his color in the spiritual world. And so the question I get is, well, why is he white on your altar? He's completely pure, like marble, white. In many of the temples, the marble is black, which is befitting to the description that we get of Krishna in the spiritual world. So maybe Prabhupada had a particular reason for this. I don't know it, and if you could share it with us, if you know it, that would be greatly appreciated, because then we can give that answer in a manner which is will be hopefully, you know, satisfying to an inquirer. Thank you. Go ahead.
The only thing that comes to mind, because I don't know if Prabhupada has spoken on this. I don't know, but if I was asked this question, I would then immediately go to Lord Chaitanya. He's looking at Jagannath, but he sees Syamasundar. He doesn't see Jagannath, but he sees Krishna with the flute. Therefore, since Rukmini Dwarkadish are so exquisitely beautiful, one day you will see Syamasundar. So keep worshipping.
But isn't Syamasundara blackish?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't have the answer why the white.
Yeah, but that's my question.
Okay.
Thank you.
But I'm telling you how I would respond.
Okay.
Because that was your question. How would I? I already said I don't know. Now let's get somebody who didn't ask a question. You have a question? Okay. Give him the microphone.
Thank you, Nirantara Prabhu. Many times we hear this, that there's one thing that Krishna does not interfere with a living entity, and that's his free will.
Yes.
So sometimes I hear from many devotees, or even myself, that seeing how the material energy is playing so many tricks in the living entity because of our rebelliousness, or not willing to surrender, that we even say, why don't you just trade my free will now so I can get back there? Don't make it so difficult, Krishna. But it's not the case, because Krishna doesn't want robots.
Right.
So then, in analyzing the living entities in the spiritual world, like Mother Yasoda, it appears, you know, like the thinking, feeling, and willing is overtaken by the divine energy, Yoga Maya. So is it correct to think that actually, in one sense, the free will of the living entity for the pleasure of Krishna is being...
Okay. In terms of the eternal associates, I cannot speak on. I don't know fully about the eternal associates. But as far as the jiva souls who are in the spiritual world, Prabhupada does say, you have minute free will, and yes, it's possible to fall again, according to what Prabhupada teaches. so that you will never, even when you and I go back to Godhead, we will still have minute free will. What, Archita Das? I don't know about Yashoda and the others. That I can't speak on.
Hare Krishna, thank you for a wonderful class. In answer to Maharaj's question, it is answered. The answer is there, that you can worship the Lord in seven different forms. In stone, wood, metal, jewels, earth, in the mind. So these forms are not necessarily the original color. If you make a form of Krishna made out of metal, it's not necessarily going to be
black. Ah, this is good.
It's not necessarily going to be black.
Yes,
it's not the color that's important. It's the form, the proper installation, and then the worship, not treating it like a statue. In many homes, they have black form of Krishna, but because it's not properly initiated and not properly worshipped, Krishna's not there. But when you properly install a deity, it's in any color. When it's properly installed and you properly worship the deity as the Supreme, then the Supreme is there.
I like
it's not the color that's important.
Like, yeah, the brass. That was good.
Yeah, and brass and jewels and sand.
Yes.
Like the gopis made a form of Katyayani in sand,
yes,
on the banks of the Yamuna. So it's not the color that's important. It's your intention, the proper installation, and the proper worship of the form.
Now, what about his question?
Whose question?
Sachita Noise. About free will and Mother Yashoda and the aspect that I can't answer.
You answered it.
No.
Living entity always has free will.
Living entity, but he wants to know about Yashoda.
What about her?
Well, she's in a different category. She's not a jiva soul.
No. This whole pastime of Yashoda is meant for our instruction. Yashoda is always in a mood of maternal affection to Krishna. But this momentary pulling back, you could say, of the Yogamaya curtain is for us to understand her position, that she's not ordinary. Yeah, she's not ordinary. We're being instructed, just like Arjuna being put into illusion so that we can understand Bhagavad Gita. So similarly, Yashoda Mayi is being put into this situation of seeing the universal form so we can understand it. Her